You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to Dotto Tech. I am Steve Dotto and we are ever so glad you are joining us on this fine day. Art Factora, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, are you licking your wounds after last week's App Wednesday?
I didn't appreciate the tweets and the Facebook updates about
the taunting?
Yeah, about how John Beeler, it was almost like you are his agent. And you are touting him for trade season.
Me.
And you're like, look how great my player is. How much are you going to give me for him?
I think you're being overly sensitive, Art.
Perhaps. But I felt like I was your golden boy. I was your golden boy for 3 months.
Yeah, but you haven't been lately.
Now you
what have you done for me? What
toss
have you,
me away.
What have you done for me lately?
I'm your present day Roberto Luongo.
Yeah, and I hope that I can trade you.
Yes.
So are we going to talk hockey? Are we going to talk hockey? No, we're not going to talk hockey. We talk. No, it was fun. You know, this is our 101st episode. We're now a well-oiled machine.
Are we still going
uphill?
Here's the peak?
Here's the thing, Art. You and I are a team now.
I know that.
Have you done 100 shows with anybody else?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, there you go. So it's like we're a well-oiled machine. I think you should develop a little sense of personal confidence.
Not in this business.
That's true. That's true. We could be off the air tomorrow.
Absolutely.
That's true. We could be off the air tomorrow. It has been a busy week. Busy week for me, but interesting week in the world of tech. Of course, BlackBerry finally launched in the States, and you know it's all going well from that perspective. Most interesting thing is this little hissy match that they're having over in Europe. Have you heard about this?
Between
Spamhaus, and Cyberbunker.
Well, I think of Spamhaus, I think of this Hawaiian place that served a great spam breakfast.
Grilled spam?
Yes.
Yeah, no, this is Spamhaus.
Okay.
Like H-A-U-S, Spamhaus.
Okay.
There's been a spam or a internet watchdog company that basically blacklists bad people on the internet. Called Spamhaus, and so they filter out pirates and stuff like that. So they go after ne'er-do-wells online. They identified a Dutch web hosting company called Cyberbunker. They accused them of all sorts of nasty things on the internet. And Cyberbunker is a typical of, I think, Dutch culture to a certain extent. They say we follow our own rules. We will host anything on our site if it isn't terrorism-related or child porn. Other than that, we'll host it.
Wow, that leaves a lot.
It leaves a lot. There's no gray area. It leaves a lot of black area, I think, for them, needless to say, people who do spam attacks and stuff like that flock to them for their hosting. So Spamhaus identified them as a problem and started to block their servers a bit.
Do you know where I get the most spam? And this is very annoying. I have a Gmail account, which is fine. I don't typically get a lot. Gmail has a pretty good filter. Any sort of spam that I do get was my fault for signing up for things. But I do get a lot of spam on my blog, the podcast that I've been doing for a couple months here. And it seems like almost every day there'll be, and it's usually like some expensive like Louis Vuitton purse spam. And it's very annoying, and I have no idea how to get rid of it. And I don't know what kind of blockers are necessary.
And your email.
Well, it goes to, my email, because the blog will send me a notification that somebody, you know, posted on your blog, like, you know, made a comment on a picture or something. And it's some fake email and then like a link to, some online high-end purse sales.
Can we deal with your issue after I finish with the story? Because now everybody's left wondering what's happened between Spamhaus and
I think it's all interrelated. But go ahead.
It's not. But the thing that happened is Cyberbunker, the people that use it, have launched a denial of service attack on Spamhaus, which is using up as much as 50% of the internet available bandwidth. It has been. So if you've noticed a slowdown the last couple of days, it's because of this war that's going on between these two. So that's what that's what I wanted to say. Now, you asked a very practical question, is how do you deal with spam on your Gmail because of you're getting Louis Vuitton ads?
Well, it's because they will spam the blog.
Yes. Okay. So what you've got there is you have to put a something on your blog that blocks spam. So you have to create it's basically a comments engine. And there's a variety of them. Are you on WordPress?
Yes.
So look up for WordPress, look up spam. That's the popular area for people to post spam because they can't get to people by email as much anymore. So they typically go in and they pay people or have bots that go in and say, that's an interesting comment you made. And then they put this ad in their blog
post.
Exactly. Exactly. So there is a variety of different tools that you can put into your WordPress site which will block that. Disqus, D-I-S-Q-U-E-S, is one. It's a tool that makes you verify your identity through something like your Facebook ID or your Gmail ID before you can post a comment on the site, which filters out an awful lot of the spam. So you have to look for something like that to plug into your WordPress site. Aren't you glad you asked?
This is the first time I've learned something on this show. 100 shows into it. And
you wound me.
Oh.
You won't. That's not simply not true.
You're right. It's not true. It's the first time. It's the first time I learned something today.
You probably learn something almost every day.
Almost every week. Yes.
Every week you do the show. We got a great show lined up this week. I should let people know. We've got Julian Saunders joining us. We're going to be talking notebooks and tablets, I think. Reconnecting with somebody from way in the past in my history, Patrick Payne is going to be joining us. He's from Quick Mobile, an interesting Canadian company. I actually got two Vancouver-based companies, developers that kind of are probably below the horizon for most people as far as seeing what they do, but two very interesting development companies in Vancouver. One is Quick Mobile, who do these management systems for events. So if you go to a major event, it would have the schedule of speakers, it would have the agenda, it would have the rooms, it would have all sorts of event-related information so you can manage events and meetings. So they've developed this system, and they've got like 130 people working for them now here in Vancouver. Hmm. I mean, a big tech company that probably a lot of us haven't heard of. And another is in startup mode. It's two brothers, twin brothers. We seem to have a penchant for getting twin brothers.
This might be the third pair of twins.
Well, definitely the guys from SFU that did hiretheworld.com. Those guys are twins. And then these guys are twins. And then you typically got the twins that come in and you say help are auditing or watching what you do to learn about being producers.
Yes.
Yes. Helga and Yvonne, I think, are the twins that...
They're fantastic.
They are fantastic. Anyways, these twins, very serious. They've developed a website called Connect the Doc, which is basically tying people into healthcare providers within the Lower Mainland. It's all private healthcare, so if you need a massage therapist, a chiropractor, a physiotherapist, that sort of stuff. It helps you get appointments and choose them, and they've got a rating system which kind of flies a little bit in the face of the Yelps of the world. It's called Connect the Doc, and they're still in startup mode, and they're growing through and starting out here in the Lower Mainland.
You got a great name. That's a good start.
Connect the Doc. I think it is a good name. And so we've got a stellar lineup today.
Jam-packed, as they say.
As they say.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs.
Do you have a comment or a question for Dottotech?
Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now is Patrick Payne. He is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Quick Mobile. Now, Quick Mobile is a development company that builds mobility solutions for conferences. But Patrick, you and I go back way before the world of mobility. What you used to be you were an amateur filmmaker. Was that your vocation at the time?
That was actually when I was at UBC. That was our final project, Steve. I remember it very well, Psychic Avenger. And actually, you know, it's on. There's a short version on YouTube. It's you should check it out. You're very.
I have a credit. I have an IMDb credit. I think I was a victim of a plague in your film, right?
You were actually the assistant to Frank in the science lab.
And I got infected by something, though, didn't I?
I think I got infected by something. I can't remember. Maybe I'm mixing up some different movies, but I'm pretty sure I got some sort of an infection or something. Something bad happened to me. It did not end well for Steve in that particular movie.
actually, it was a great performance, Steve.
Well, thank you.
Memorable.
Well, since then we've both gone on to other things. Now you have been around in the mobility space in BC for a long time. A background with Electronic Arts and Distinctive Software, all the way through to working with Wavefront, which is, of course, the industry association around wireless mobility. And you've got this company, Quick Mobile, which I don't know why it came to my attention. I noticed something. You guys did some sort of promotional campaign. I started reading about it, contacted your PR department, and they down in California, and they sent me right back to Vancouver to tell me about the company. So tell me about Quick Mobile. What's the basis of your guys' business?
Okay, so you've been to a lot of conferences, Steve. I know you have. And you will register. You'll show up at the door the day of the conference. They'll give you a backpack or a bag of some sort or another, a lot of trinkets, and usually a printed program guide. So conceptually what Quick Mobile does is we take all of that information and we digitize it, put it on a smartphone, so that you can connect with attendees, you can see the schedule, you can create your own schedules, you can do social networking, you can message attendees that are at that conference. Virtually anything that you can imagine that you would want to do at a conference or an event or trade show, we've put it onto a smartphone or a tablet. And in fact, there's so many advantages to having it, you know, dynamic and online and, on a device that you carry around with you that, really these printed programs and the traditional methods for, connecting people and informing people are really, starting to fade fast in this industry.
A quick visit to your website sees a pretty impressive list of clients who you've prepared for. So when you build an app, so basically walk me through the process. If I'm putting on an event, a conference, and it's got to be of a certain size, I guess, to start to make sense for you. What's the kind of the strike point that starts to make sense for your product?
Well, if it's a large conference or a small conference, people use them in different ways. With the smaller conferences, though, we have a product that we call it Mobile Event. And, there's groups that are 50 people that are using that particular product.
Oh, wow.
But, typically, as I say, we do lots of large events where you might have 20, even 30,000 people at an event like Dreamforce or, Sapphire and some of these other groups that we've worked with. But, with the large organizations that we work with as well, like Microsoft or Coca-Cola and Google and Dell, they do hundreds, sometimes thousands of meetings within their organization. And we have a product called SnapApp that actually empowers those people to create what we do is we create a master app for them, and then they can self-serve the events inside that master app. So even little meetings with the managers and or sales meetings and virtually anything you can imagine, they're starting to use this app for a replacement for the traditional program guide.
Now, when you build an app, how generic is it as far as delivery? If people have, you've got people at almost all events now with a BlackBerry, an iPhone, or an Android phone for sure. You're going to find that mix, and sometimes they're going to have Windows phones. Do your apps, when you create the content, does your tool spit out versions for all of those different flavors?
Yes, it does. In fact, the way that we designed it was a little bit different than the way we've seen a lot of other companies that are trying to do the same thing. A lot of companies have built a template, and then they go in and they modify that template for each app or each event that they create it for. What we've done is we've actually created components. So we have an attendee component. We have a speaker component. We have a Twitter component. We have a notes component, a messaging component. We've got more than 30 different components. So what we do when we develop the app is we actually sort of a la carte cut the components and put them into the app so you can really customize the look and feel of that app. And one of the other things we do is we focus a lot on the branding for that particular event or that company as well, because that brand and that flexibility to be able to change the functionality for each event is actually very important for these organizations.
So primarily for the people who are putting on the event, the number one appeal is going to be organizational. It's going to be being able to have a dynamic schedule that if something right. changes, if a room assignment changes, you can let all of the attendees know right away for that the different room is happening, or if a speaker ends up being late and you have to juggle the schedule, you can do all of that online and it's pushed out to all of the phones right away.
In real time, exactly. So that's the dynamic nature of it. But it also allows people to find people and connect with people that might be at a show. I mean, if you're at a show, I'm sure you've been to one where they've got 10,000 people or something. It's hard to find people. And so you can find them by just searching the attendee list, as an example. Then you can send them a message and you can put it into your own personalized schedule. But, you know, for organizers, there's all kinds of other insights that we've seen them use. As an example, you know, we've been able to say, gee, look, you know, 400 people have this particular workshop or something in their My Schedule, so in their personal schedule. They're planning to attend that particular workshop. We've only got 200 chairs in the room. We've got to change the room, you know. So things like that that you wouldn't expect people to automatically twig into, but we can provide those kinds of insights, and those are the kinds of things people are starting to use these apps for.
You mentioned off the top that you had a Twitter app. One of the things that I'm finding at most conferences that I speak at right now is there's a real emphasis, and I'm actually putting it up myself. I'm putting up at the start of my talk, I'm giving them my Twitter ID, and I'm giving them my hashtag or a hashtag around the event, and I'm hoping that people will tweet out the event and tweet out the pithy comments that I make during my talk, because that creates some really nice social media juice. Do you have something to help kind of foster that kind of communication?
Yes, absolutely. Every event that we go to now and that we provide an app for now pretty much includes a social media piece to it, whether it's connecting people through their Facebook page and doing comments and status updates on what's happening at the event through their Facebook page and people commenting and all those kinds of things, to literally having the hashtag there and in real time being able to have people commenting and tweeting about whatever might be happening at the conference at any given point. You know, there's a couple other things that are pretty interesting. I mean, you're talking about engagement now and getting people involved and trying to get them to really experience that event. We're seeing a lot of organizations that are including things like gamification. Mm-hmm. So we can do things like create a game where the more people tweet, the more points they get. Maybe they'll win an iPad at the end of the conference or something. Or if they go to certain key events or like the opening reception and things like that, they can use a QR code and get their attendance registered and they get 5 points or something. If they create a picture and add it to the gallery, they get 5 points. And before you know it, people are really getting competitive to get up that leaderboard, and it's great for engagement and people getting to know each other in a fun sort of competitive environment for the event.
And now we should make it clear that your software is designed to manage the event itself as opposed to being a registration system or a promotional event or a promotional product in front of the event. Am I correct?
That's correct, yes. Now, that said, we interface with those registration systems. That's a standard part of what we do. You know, we've got over 130 people now. And
wow.
So, yeah, some of our... We've got a whole team of probably 10 data people that do nothing but connect with the various registration systems, and they provide with an XML feed so that, you know, if people show up or they want to change the schedule or if they want to do any kinds of program changes or whatever, they can automatically be updated in the app virtually instantaneously.
Now, it's one thing for a Coca-Cola or a major commercial sponsor to use, or a company to take advantage of your product. What about associations, kind of the ones with a little less money in their jeans? I'm thinking of the number of educational conferences and the teacher conferences and those sorts of things. Do you scale into that space?
We do a lot of trade shows and associations, but we are not really out there trying to do those sort of real mass market, you know, 30 people getting together for a single night. You know, I think there are organizations out there that are focused on that market. Our market is more, certainly there's a big focus for us on the enterprise space, and we've got a lot of companies that we work with there. But we still have a great low-end, I'll call it, full functionality in our product for trade shows and associations, and we do all kinds of events for them.
Yeah, and I was talking more along the lines of like a teacher's conference where you'd have 400 to 1,000 teachers, and they have tons of breakout sessions and workshops and that sort of stuff.
So we do those all the time. We did well over 1,000 apps last year, and a lot of them were those types of events. And, you know, we're typically those kinds of events that they either don't have the budget or, it hasn't been put into a budget line item yet. But, even in that $5,000 to $10,000 range is typically within their budget. Certainly they're starting to use them, put that in their budgets anyway, over the next couple of years, for sure.
And it's a kind of a two-stage process for organizations that are looking at your product. The first stage is, once they've decided they do it, is you have to be engaged at the top, because you actually build a framework for them. Once you've built that framework and they're repeating the event year after year or in different locations, then they can go in and they can edit the content, change the specifics. But basically, you have to develop that first framework for them. Am I correct?
That's correct. That's actually our Snap App product. So we do one-off events as well.
Okay.
Or we can, but the Snap App idea is that you can create a single master app, and then you can go on to the web and use our Quick Start CMS system, and that allows you to create events that can then go into that master app. So there's lots of organizations that do 20, 30 events a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's ideal for that kind of a situation. But even companies that might do 10 events a year or even 5 events, they can use that technology to very quickly create events inside that master app. But you're right. We create that master app or that master framework so that they can go and then create the events inside that application.
And if you're doing just a one-off event, though, is that something that they do themselves, or is that something that you have to get engaged in as well with your own programming people?
We typically use either our team to build it, but we have a lot of partners that we work with now who also can also build those simple one-off apps.
And so you're 150 people now, and you're based here in Vancouver. You've kind of been flying under the radar for the high-tech community here for a while.
Yeah, we're not quite at 150. We're just over 130 now.
But oh, okay.
By summer, I would say we're going to be at 150. That's how fast we're growing. We literally just can't keep up with the demand that we're seeing right now. You know, you wonder why a company like Google would work with Quick Mobile, right? And Google can do anything they want, obviously, but they recognize that we've already built all of these things, and we've been doing this now since 2008, literally doing nothing but mobile event apps. And so they recognize that there's a lot of technology we've already developed, and there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. They're going to stick to their core competencies and use our system to get maximum benefit, so they don't have to duplicate everything that we've already done.
Well, for anybody that's organizing conferences or has a repeating series of events, I think that the mix of different benefits that you folks offer, from the communication with attendees to being able to make changes on the fly, to even the green aspect of the fact you're not printing off all of these agendas and daily schedules that are then just tossed in the trash. There's a lot to be said for your venture. I'm impressed.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate that. I mean, that sustainability piece is extremely important as well. You know, one other thing I might just say is, you know, you and I know each other from way back, but I've been in the software business now for, you know, 25 plus years, and I've never really seen this kind of software development before because, for one thing, you've got, as you mentioned, you know, five different platforms. You've got iOS, you've got Android, BlackBerry, Windows, and mobile web, which we also provide mobile websites for these events as well. Then you've got, you know, integration with all these different systems, you know, Reg systems and real-time feeds. They may have all kinds of videos and things like that they want to include. And you've also got security. I mean, security is a big, big issue with these large corporations. All this data has to be securely managed, you know, from the beginning to the end. And, you know, mobile is, you know, a new area where these kinds of security issues can be very challenging for sure. And then lastly, you know, this event is going to happen on a particular day. Let's say it's April the 15th. Well, it has to be delivered on that day. It can't be, or you know, hopefully weeks before that. But, you know, if you deliver it on April the 16th, it is a complete and utter fail. And yeah. So that's rather a new challenge that I haven't seen in my years of software development, where you've just got this hard date that you must hit. But, you know, it's a challenge, but we have a lot of fun doing it for sure.
Well, I'm going to keep an eye on it. I'm certainly fascinated by it, and as I do a lot of conferences myself, I'll be asking a lot of different conference organizers if they've looked at it and get their take on it over the next little while. Patrick, and it's good to see that you found something beyond filmmaking, as did I. I'm not sure that we were ever destined for stardom in that particular path.
Well, we never give up hope, though, do we?
I have. Trust me, I have. Patrick Payne is the co-founder and chief executive officer at Quick Mobile. Thanks so much for your time, Patrick.
My pleasure, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now, twin brothers, Nashil and Nadeem Kazam. They are the brains behind Connect the Dock. It is a new online site which is designed for actually servicing a whole multitude of different services within the private medical field. You can go to their site and you can research and find yourself different healthcare professionals, and you can actually book appointments with them and also research what other patients think of the of those healthcare providers. Did I explain that properly, guys?
Yeah, good explanation.
Okay, I guess we can just wrap things up then. So tell me, Connect the Dock, it is a, I visit your site, and the first thing that I find is a variety of different services. And this is all private healthcare. This is not going into our public healthcare system at this point. It's all about finding private healthcare. So we're talking dentists, massage therapists, chiropractors, that sort of stuff.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and so why did you think that we needed a site to help connect patients and services?
So I guess it all comes down to the problem that we were trying to solve, and I'll tell you the story behind how we came up with the idea. I was at my graduation at Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington, and my dad, who is a dentist, he called me up 2 days before my graduation, and he told me that he was going to be late for the ceremony because he had an emergency patient. And without really thinking, I just told my dad, I was like, hey, Dad, like, why don't you just tell your patient to find another dentist and to book an appointment online? And I didn't really think too much about it. I thought that that was something that that patient can do and something that my dad could do as a service to help his patient, you know, find an emergency appointment.
Mm-hmm.
turns out that, you know, after doing a little bit of research, that that service didn't exist. So, you know, we were on Google. We spent half an hour, 40 minutes trying to find a way to get his patient to another dentist because, you know, it's late at night and we couldn't find anything. So ended up just deciding with my brother that we were going to create the service. And after digging a little bit more into it, we found something similar in America that that existed. And then we kind of, you know, we hit the chalkboard and we figured out a way to make this happen in Canada.
So this goes beyond the rating systems that we see in like RateMD and stuff like that, where you go to look for reviews of health private healthcare providers. Instead, this actually tells me who has available appointments and allows me to book appointments online, basically in kind of a one-stop shop.
Right. So there's a few different features of our website that it makes it really convenient for the patient. They can choose the desired and compare different practitioner profiles. They can read verified reviews. So only a patient who has actually booked an appointment and the clinic has verified that they showed up for the appointment can write a review.
Okay.
You can do your full research and really get to know the clinic and the practitioner that you are considering to see. Then you can see different availabilities in their schedule, and you can book your appointment online in about a minute. So one of the big benefits is that instead of taking time off of work and, you know, obviously you're losing money there, you can find a time that's convenient and you can go in and book online any time of the day. So you don't have to leave a message or send an email. You don't have to spend your time during work to book the appointment. You can do it after hours 24/7.
So the technical guy in me is curious. How are you setting this up? I guess your customers then are the health clinics and the health professionals, because you must be tying into their back end accounting and registration.
Right.
Systems.
Actually, so we keep it even simpler than that. We give them administrative access to go in. They can release different availabilities on a schedule, so they can do it from their office or from home. And so practitioners and clinicians and receptionists, whoever, can just say, hey, Dr. So-and-so is available from, you know, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. or from 8 to 9. And our system has the intelligence to know, you know, who can book an appointment when. And, yeah, there's no messing up and, you know, on that end either.
So double booking is not going to be too often the case.
I mean, it might happen from time to time if there's a human error, but it's much better than if the system were to try and connect with the practice management software, because you're looking at API challenges and stuff. And
yeah, yeah.
We have a very low double booking percentage, and every time a patient registers for an account, which is free, they have to use their email and a cell phone number, so the clinic can contact the patient if there was a mistake in the form of bookings.
Now, how what's the business model behind it? How are you folks planning on monetizing this and making money? There's no advertising on the site, so I know it's not that.
So the clinics pay a monthly subscription fee.
Okay, so they pay a subscription fee, and what's so you've got at this point here? You started out with a certain subset of specialties, and then now you're starting to expand it. Correct.
Correct.
So you started with chiropractors, massage therapists, and physiotherapists. That was kind of your sweet spot to begin with.
Yeah.
And now the one that I'm most interested in is dentist. The dentistry one must be the most interesting one. The one that has the potential largest market. Am I wrong?
I mean, no, you're not wrong in the sense that the average spend for a new patient at the dental office is quite high.
Mm-hmm.
So the return on investment for a dentist is significantly higher than for any of our other professions. So it's a great tool for dentists to go out and release a few availabilities. And when someone comes to our site and searches for like an emergency dental appointment or, you know, any, like whether it's a cosmetic dental appointment, if they can get that one new patient, then that can sometimes be, you know, they say the average lifetime value of a dental patient is roughly $10,000 to $15,000.
Oh.
So anytime you've paid the service off for years, if you can just get one kind of cosmetic or even one good regular dental patient. But, you know, again, it's a really good tool for a chiropractor too. You know, if you can get your existing customer base to book online and reduce some of your administrative costs and really fill up your schedule for 15-minute adjustments, it's a really good tool for them as well.
So, and that's what I was just wondering about. I can see where this is a really beneficial tool if I've just moved into an area and now I'm looking for these services. But if I've lived here for any period of time, I probably, you know, I've probably got in my phone book or in my email, I've got the people who I deal with in this area. What's the benefit to the to this online booking system? Does this mean that they won't go with different online booking systems themselves as they're available? It's a value. I guess what I'm asking is it a value to repeat clients as much as to new clients?
Absolutely. We have something called the Book Now button, which is just a little snippet of code which you can paste onto your website. Mm-hmm. And it's going to generate a custom kind of booking page just for your business.
Oh.
And so it's something you can give your existing patients just as, you know, extra convenience. Let your existing patients go in, book online 24/7. Let them find times they like with the practitioners they already work with. So it's also kind of a better call to action page.
Yeah.
Instead of requesting an appointment or calling after hours, don't you want that person to take the action of booking an appointment directly online?
Okay. Now, what about the mobile application? Is this a phone friendly thing? Do you have a mobile app? Do you think a lot of people are going to be booking these appointments with their phones?
I think down the road they will be. I think people are just getting to the point where they're ready to book healthcare appointments online. We're going to be working on a mobile app, you know, shortly down the road. But right now, anyone can come to our website and book an appointment on their phone. It's a mobile-friendly site, but there isn't an app yet.
Okay. Now, I guess critical mass is crucial for you. You guys, your fear has to be, or your goal has to be, you have to reach a point where there's enough providers that mm-hmm. you become a very valuable resource. So how do you get to that level? How do you communicate to the practitioners and get them on board? What's your strategy around that?
It's a combination of a few things. Right now, we're just continually working on things like, you know, our SEO and we're using AdWords and we're trying to get our name out there. We have a couple cars vinyl. We were on the radio for a couple months. So I think once we increase the amount of traffic to our site, we're going to be more appealing to clinics to sign up. And we're also going to try to create kind of an events initiative where we kind of sponsor different sports teams and we, you know, we put on various runs and sporting events and just try to get into the community so that healthcare practitioners can see that we're you know, bringing in a lot of traffic to our site, and then we'll be a little bit more appealing. And we'll kind of like slowly, organically kind of grow our brand.
Okay, now I'm dying to ask you this question. It's probably the one you'll least want to hear, but how close or why are you not doing this for my local clinic for that's part of the BC Medical Health System? I mean, for me, you know, I'm sitting home with a flu. I got to go see the doctor because I'm feeling terrible. And I'd just love to be able to go online, book that appointment, and then know that I can stay home till 15 minutes before I go instead of sitting in that waiting room for 2.5 hours. Why aren't you boys doing it for that?
We talked to some doctors, and one of the biggest challenges with them is that they're already so busy, and they don't have any availability to release to the system that it just you would end up coming and seeing a directory of all the different places you could go, but you wouldn't actually get to book an appointment. They're already way too busy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's partially a marketing tool for the clinics and a tool for the patients. But realistically, we're not going to be able to deliver to the patients what they want because, you know, the receptionist is just going to give up on releasing it because they're already fully booked anyways.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think you guys should put your minds on this. Think about it. Figure it out.
Figure it out, exactly.
Yeah, we are trying to there are a couple of different online startups out there that are, you know, trying to do a similar thing that we're doing. And you know, there's some that sometimes have, like, I think there's now one that you can have, like, a video meeting with the doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to find a way to do something like that where they, you know, a patient can still talk to a doctor, can still, you know, through online, through social media, whatever it may be, that might be an option that we look at down the road.
Okay.
And I know that, you know, sometimes the doctor offices, when a doctor graduates from university and they're starting out their practice, you know, they've got about a month before their clinic becomes fully booked. And so it might just be a matter of figuring out who those doctors are that are starting their new practices and trying to help them get bill within a month.
Now, that leads me into the last question that I have, which is, what about communication back and forth? Typically speaking, if I'm looking for a lot of these services, I'm looking at the cosmetics, skincare, you know, a lot of them are... you're not exactly sure what you're looking for. You're looking to go in for a consultation or something like that. Is there much dialogue? Is there an opportunity to have a conversation either through email or chat or something with the clinics before you, as you're planning your booking?
So there's a couple of things we've done. I think one of the benefits of our service is it really appeals to people who are kind of desperately in need, like a very short notice. Like I just hurt my shoulder.
I want to find a massage therapist now.
Yeah. I think for those customers, the goal is to just see someone right away, and they don't necessarily need to have that dialogue. However, if they did want some dialogue, all of our profiles link back to the clinic's website, and they can contact the clinic through that website. They're also social media integrated, so they can get to the clinic's Facebook page if they wanted to social media. So there's small kind of mechanisms for contact, but there's nothing directly built in quite yet.
Okay, so my guests are Nashil and Nadeem Kassam. They are the founders of Connect the Doc. It is online booking for all sorts of private healthcare. We'll keep our eye on it, and I might indeed use it if I have that emergency dental appointment I need to book. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Take care.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to DottoTech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Indeed, nobody does it better than Julian Sanders. Julian joins me now from his customary haunts in deepest, darkest Saskatchewan. How are you doing, Julian?
Pretty good. We still have a lot of snow here, but otherwise, I'm doing great. How about you, Steve?
We don't have a lot of snow here.
Oh, well, you guys are lucky. Spring must be treating you nice.
Did we have any snow this year, Art? I can't even remember. Do we have any?
I think it dusted.
Yeah, I don't remember shoveling once.
No.
No, well, I think
I'll,
we...
I'll pack some up and send some your way then.
You can just keep it. We get enough immigrants from Saskatchewan coming out to watch football games here, so that's enough. That's enough. So how are things, Julian? You want to talk today about tablet computers that think they're notebooks.
Right. The whole shape of computers has really changed over the last, even just the last few months.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people have seen touchscreen computers. A lot of people are used to having a tablet like an iPad or, you know, smartphones that have been around for quite some time. But now the whole trend is moving all the way into the computer itself. So there's a lot of new ways you can interact with your computer.
And can we kind of lay this more at Microsoft's feet than at Apple's feet?
I would say so, yeah. Apple doesn't make a touchscreen computer, so the PC guys have really stepped up. We carry a ton of laptops with touchscreens that look like regular laptops. We have about a dozen models at any given day where you can reach up and scroll through the tiles very quickly, pull up some information. So it's a really, really nice way. It could be a lot faster than using a mouse.
Well, you mean just sitting down with your notebook and reaching out and touching the screen, which I'm not sure I'm crazy about. I know I used to, on our TV show, we showed the first iterations of these touchscreen computers that were all-in-ones with a touchscreen, and they were designed like often for kitchen use and that sort of thing. But I always thought that I didn't want somebody's greasy fingers touching my screen. And that's still the issue I have around notebooks with touch screens. Help me out there.
That's a valid point, actually. One of the things they've innovated over the last several years is really good coatings for touch screens. So you don't see the grease and just a good microfiber
cloth. Still there.
Yeah. And it won't, a lot of people think, you know, the more you use it, it'll wear off, but the touchscreen will outlast the hardware itself that's running the computer. So a good microfiber cloth, we even have things to sanitize them quickly and safely, so a good cleaning, and you're okay to go there. If you're worried about the grubbies, they've got you covered.
So when a person comes into the store today shopping for a notebook computer, how focused are they on a classic notebook? We're not talking about the Apple world, of course, but if they're in the Windows world, how focused are they on a classic notebook, and how much of a conversation do they have around should I be getting a convertible tablet or should I be getting a notebook?
Well, it depends on what you want to use it for, and usually it depends on what you already have. A lot of people are looking for a computer because they've got one that's old. Some people have purchased a tablet, a first generation something a couple of years ago, and now they're looking at replacing their whole computer because they're tired of the limitations of the laptop, or maybe they, you know, can't install their tax software or something on there. And it's a good option for people that want to replace their system with something that can serve two purposes, especially if you're not always using your computer in one place, because that's been the big thing. Everybody wants to unplug and run out the door and keep their contacts, keep their computer with them to do everything they're used to. So having the convertible style, it gives you a lot of choices to where you can use it and how you can use it, so you're not stuck with just a touchscreen. You're not stuck with just a laptop that you have to whip out and put on your knees. It gives you a lot more flexibility.
So walk me through the size of these. So does it start with 11-inch tablets, really, that have keyboards attached that some of the manufacturers just kind of go and kind of almost turn into little mini notebooks? Is that the beginning of the form factor?
It is, yeah. The 11-inch seems to be about the smallest usable because the 10-inch tablet's being quite popular. There's a couple of touchscreen laptops from Asus that are even at entry-level prices. There's the X202 11-inch laptop with a touchscreen, and it's $549, and it gives you basic specs. So it's really a replacement, kind of like a high-end netbook for specs. So it gives you the long battery life without having to spend a lot of money. Then there's ones where you can actually take the screen right off the laptop.
Yes. So
those are what really boggle people sometimes. Now, Asus started it off with a dock for, basically they had a keyboard and a screen and you could pop the screen off. Mm-hmm. It was running Android. We still have those. They're quite popular. And now the HP guys have come out with their own. The HP Envy X2 is an 11-inch convertible with a removable screen. So it's really a thing to see. It's something you should put your hands on. Basically, when you have the screen in your hands, you've got the guts of the computer on you. So you can use it like you would a tablet that you use just with touch. The keyboard will pop up on screen when you need it. And then it has a hinge on the keyboard that you snap the screen into, and then you've got your real keys, you've got USB ports, and HDMI.
Okay.
So it gives you all of the features.
Now, this X2, is it the equivalent of a Microsoft Surface tablet when it's disconnected, or is it limited more than the Surface would be?
It's the same software. It has Windows 8 full. It doesn't have a tablet version of the operating system. But to keep the price down, HP decided to go with a little bit different group of specs inside of the speed of the computer. So it's an Atom-based processor, 2 gigs of RAM, and a 64-gig solid-state storage drive. So it really gives you a little bit less for total power overall, but it keeps the price down while still giving you a full PC.
Why would you consider that, other than price, over getting something like the Surface and just getting a more skookum keyboard for the Surface?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question that a
that's
lot of
my
people
job.
Have asked me. Yeah,
yeah.
I get that pretty much every time now when I'm showing somebody the X2, and the big answer is battery life, because it'll give you about a 6 to 8 hour battery life without the dock connected. With the dock connected, it'll give you 8 to 10 hours.
So there's two batteries. There's one in the dock. There's one in the screen.
Right. Yeah. And the two combined are advertised at about 10 hours. And I'd say without having to go into ridiculous energy settings or energy efficient settings, you'd get about 8 hours.
What is the dream system if I want the absolute best tablet configuration keyboard? What's like? The HP starts at about $600. The Surface tablet starts at about $100 more than that. I think it is. But if money is no object, what am I going to be buying?
Well, there's actually two for money is no object. My favorite is the one I'll say first. It's the Asus Tai Chi dual screen laptop, and it's $1,299, so it's actually not that much compared to, say, a high-end PC. It has very good specs. It's like buying a nice ultrabook with an i5, 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage. But the way Asus has made it, so it sits on the shelf, looks like a regular laptop, 11-inch screen on the inside. They used a gorgeous IPS panel, so the colors are very vibrant, mm-hmm. very good for text. And then on the back side of the laptop, instead of just having a lid, they have a touch screen on the back.
A second screen?
Right.
That's ridiculous.
So basically, you close the computer, pick it up while it's closed, and you've got a tablet. It's full Windows 8. You have access to all of the same stuff that you would have if you open the laptop. It has a very nifty utility that's very stable for showing things on the second screen. So you can even set it up with somebody at a table and have them see something else while you're controlling something on the other side.
So you can just for presentation. So it's a dual screen. Now, are both screens the same quality?
The IPS panels on the inside, they used a high-end LED on the backside. So it has a finish just like a 11-inch tablet does. So the colors on the other side aren't amazing, but they're the same as on most laptops.
That's ridiculous. I'm sorry. It's just that. So what they've done is they've gone with two screens as opposed to the traditional way of doing this, which is through a hinge, which would spin and allow you to flip the panel over.
Right, and that keeps the computer very thin. It's about 3.5 inches. At its thickest point.
Two screens makes it thinner than the hinging option?
Because the hinge has more mechanisms in it to do the locking and the flipping.
And it has to be more robust, yeah.
Right, yeah, and they've made this very sleek. So when it's closed and you're using it as a tablet, it actually is it's a little bit about 2 millimeters thicker than the original iPad was.
There we go, the Asus Tai Chi, $1,200. That is... I don't know. I almost don't have words for it. Very interesting. Okay. What was the other one that you liked?
The other one was the Toshiba Slider. So they call this a U920. It has a very nerdy name. But the U920 has a screen that slides over top of the keyboard. So there's no flipping it around, and it keeps it very thin. It's, again, the same Ultrabook specs that you're used to seeing, i5, 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage. Mm-hmm. And you can either use it in a regular laptop when it's sitting up, or you can put the screen flat. You basically just push on the screen, and it lays down flat, and then it slides over the keyboard. The back of the screen slides over the keyboard.
Oh, so they do it with a hinge in the bezel of the screen as opposed to in the bottom attached to the keyboard itself.
Right, and yeah. The advantage to the Toshiba is it has a couple of more ports, and it gives you the same reliability that Toshiba is famous for. So it's a very strong option from them. The touch—it's also a little bit bigger of a screen. So somebody looking for something that's not an 11-inch, it's a nice convertible with decent speeds for multitasking. And it also has wireless displays, so you can do Wi-Fi should you have that, which the Asus, unfortunately, doesn't have.
Okay, and it costs about the same as the Asus does.
Right, and it's a 12.5-inch screen.
But it's bigger, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a little bit bigger, and it starts at $1,150 for that one.
Wow. So we're seeing, does all of this movement towards these either touchscreen or tablet-enabled notebooks or tablet combination notebooks, have they basically killed the netbook?
Yeah, they have, yeah. It hasn't been manufactured for a while. Asus's EPC lineup was officially discontinued.
Yeah, so that's it. So this is the direction we're going. I think we're ahead of the game with it, so that's good. Julian, if you want to see, I think if you're going to make a decision on a touchscreen notebook or a tablet convertible into a notebook, you got to touch them. You got to see them. And the place to do that, tell me where, Julian.
London Drugs.
Amen, sister. I'm buying what you're preaching. Good. Julian Saunders is, of course, he's the computer manager at London Drugs there in beautiful downtown Saskatoon. Thanks so much, Julian.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Well, that's it, Art. Looks like we have run out of time yet again, as seems to happen to us each and every week. I cannot believe it.
Too much information, not enough time.
I wanted to ask you, last week we went over by like 5 seconds. Does that not throw something off on the in the entire radio sphere?
Not when the show is the DottoTech show.
Yeah, and not when it's on Wednesday evenings.
We cut 5 seconds off a Frank Sinatra song.
Did you? Poor Frank. That's sad. You know what we did not mention is we did not mention that we have a giveaway starting this week on the show. Did you know about it?
I think I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah, I did. I tweeted it out, and you probably noticed it there. We were giving away a copy of Office 365. Actually, it's a one-year subscription to the home premium version of Office 365.
That's I could use that.
Microsoft's cloud-based, full Office Suite. Word, Excel, OneNote, Outlook, all of that is all PowerPoint.
Cloud-based. How do I sign it up?
You visit the DottoTech site, and you would have to go under an assumed identity to win.
We're going with Bart Factora.
You go Bart Factora. I'll never read through that. I will never, never figure that.
I got to work on my aliases.
Yeah, you do. Hey, what do you think about the tablet thing now? I'm wondering if my notebook's too big now. I got this 13-inch Apple iPad. MacBook Pro, and it's looking too big. I'm thinking I might need a touchscreen.
Well, I play with my iPad on a daily basis. My girlfriend's sister just got the iPad Mini, so that means and the girlfriend now uses the Samsung Tab.
But here's the thing: I'm desirous of using Windows 8 and trying out that whole Surface thing and trying that space out. I don't know. I've been a Mac guy for a couple of years now. Normally, I would switch back and forth. Every year, I'd switch back Mac, Windows. But I've been in the Mac world for 2.5-3 years now. I haven't gone back to Windows for a while. I'm thinking maybe I should go back.
Just see what's going on?
Yeah, what do you think?
It's like revisiting your attic or your cellar that you haven't
I might start wearing khaki pants instead of jeans to do the show. I might shave off my beard.
You did that once.
I did it for a show, not for personal
hygiene thing.
Yeah. I like my beard and I like my jeans. I don't know if I'd like to be back in the Windows world, but I might give it a shot. I might just give it a shot.
Well, it's exciting. Yes. We live in a world where we have options.
We do. So please visit the website. And next week, I think we're going to do a social media palooza. We've got Dave Olson looking like he's going to come out to the. He's the social media guru of Hootsuite. He's the guy that pulls the community together for Hootsuite. So I think we're going to be talking social media next week. You're going to want to tune in.
I'm down with the social media.
There we go. I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in this week to DottoTech.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.